John Breaker One. This is Shark Pants Free Radio. Gamers, get your ears on because we're blowing the speakers out.
Grimdark Live. Weekly webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Warhammer worlds. Don't miss our live show on Thursdays, but for now, you've got us on sloppy seconds with our podcast with the Grimdark Gang. It's time once again for Grimdark Live.
Hey, welcome to Grimdark Live, your weekly webcast for all things Warhammer. I'm your host, Patrick, and as always, my co-hosts, Steve and Randy. Fellas, what do you hear? What do you say?
We are going to be doing a comparative analysis of the Armies of Destruction tonight.
That is right, man. That is right. I'm really looking forward to that one. And it's kind of funny because between the three of us here, we are Destruction players. So that is something that I'm definitely looking forward to. I've been looking forward to that since we actually brought that up as a topic of discussion. But Randy, the nicest guy in tabletop wargaming, buddy, what do we got, man? Anything you're gonna work the boards, chime in, and what do you got for us?
Yeah, we're gonna boards chiming in and try not to glue my fingers together.
Well, just make sure that in between gluing, you get a little sniff. You know, you can't work that hard without a reward.
Exactly.
And you got to do that, man. Yeah, and we've got some news today. We're gonna be talking about. I'm gonna put it this way. I'm gonna close my thoughts on this whole square base shocking news kind of thing that we've been hearing about on the boards. You know, big deal. And we're going to be talking about the FAQs that finally dropped. And you know, I know that they dropped the day after our show last week on Thursday. So we're going to be touching on those things. And of course, the FAQs for the Ossiarch Bone Reapers and the Ogre Maw Tribes. And then we're going to be getting into, like I said, like Steve said, the topic of the main topic, which is going to be comparing the Destruction factions. And as always, we got the question of the day and the closing thoughts towards the end of the show.
Hey, you Grimdark Goons, thank you all so much for listening to our Grimdark Live podcast. If you're new to the Grimdark Live experience or new to our podcast and like what you hear, please follow this podcast and pass us along to your friends. Let us know what you think about Grimdark Live in the show's comment sections, and let us know just how we're doing. Also, don't forget to catch us live on Thursdays. And if that ain't enough for you, check out our website at www.grimdarklive.com. That's grimdarklive.com. Anyway, thanks for listening, following, and just being awesome.
So, fellas, you ready? Let's get rolling, man. Let's start off with the news. So, as you guys know, we had the FAQ drop last Friday, I believe it was. Anyways, right after our show, where they kind of talked about some of the. Really, I got to be honest with you. Some of the stuff that's happened with the Ossiarch Bone Reapers and the Maw Tribes and Randy, Steve, did you guys check that out?
Yeah, I did. I did see it.
Yeah. Well, any thoughts before we get into the meat and potatoes of it? As far as what are your thoughts on the FAQs themselves?
Well, I think it's becoming just the thing that they do now. They release a book, they give it a couple weeks, and then they drop these FAQs, which is the natural thing to do, and I think that it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think now with as much as they've been throwing battle tomes at the community, I think they really need to address a lot of these FAQs, and I'm glad that they're doing it in a timely fashion, meaning, you know, pretty much right away. But Randy, on the Ossiarch Bone Reapers and Ogre Maw Tribes FAQs that came out, what are your thoughts, man?
Yeah, I just like how they actually, you know, address some certain things right away and not wait for the like mid-years or the end of the year, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, back in the day, you know, I can remember, you know, FAQs were like, you had a better chance of getting a lap dance by the Statue of Liberty than getting an FAQ out of GW. So I'm kind of glad to see that they're coming out pretty quick. But
I remember they used to put out in the yearly compendium, and it's just like cut these out and glue them into your book.
I remember, and you know, we all did that. Steve, you did that too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's what everyone did.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, I like what they did with the Bone Reapers. I know last week's show, we really kind of covered the Bone Reapers. We talked about them in depth. And I guess I should say we were the first live show to break the news of the OCR Bone Reapers. And yes, and that's a shameless plug. I'm tooting our horn here because Grimdark Live is the best. But we've pretty much been talking about OCR Bone Reapers every damn week since they dropped, haven't we, fellas?
Well, it's a game-changing army for death. I mean, it's the first death army that we've seen in a while that doesn't act like a death army.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I liked how they addressed the Osiark Bone Reapers Endless Spell War Scrolls for the unique Endless Spells that can be summoned. I like how they did that. I like how some of the characters, I think it was the lore of Mortisons, the mortal contract change that happened. So I guess now you cannot pick the same unit to be the target of this spell more than once per battle, which is, you know, good for people that I guess... you know, to kind of recognize that, I'm sure that would have been a big issue. So I thought the Osiarchs got a pretty clear address, I guess, as far as a FAQ is concerned. But the Ogres, you know, I want to go back to something here. You know, I'm a little, I got to say, I had hope for you guys, you know, when we first started talking about these FAQs, that you guys were really going to, you know, talk about the most important FAQ drop that happened to happen. And you guys completely missed the boat, man. Went right past you. I mean, I was here holding my breath, waiting to hear about it, and I got nothing. I mean, are you guys ashamed of yourself? Do you want to address that first?
Well, one of the mistakes is that they didn't write out the, you know, the Grotod out of the, book, whatever. All right. You know, like they didn't even, why would they even need them if they have the Ogres?
I
understand.
I want to apologize for Randy and his just really unclassy nature. You know, this is a man that doesn't understand good taste and fortitude in the gaming. You know, Steve, do you want to rebuttal to Randy's little hiccup there? Do you want to say something?
Yeah, I want to emphasize Randy's point.
You know something? I got to the shithouse door just blow open, or you guys keep talking? This is unbelievable. No, I'm going to address what's happening here.
How many extra trees did they have to cut down just to put that crappy page in that book?
Wait a
minute.
I don't
understand.
Randy, just think how many trees in the Amazon died so that Nobblers can exist.
All right, I know, and I got to tell you, every single one of those sticks, well worth the plundering for those Nobblers to get life. Nobbler scrap launchers, Rhinox sharp horns. They changed their attack characteristics from 1 to 2. I got to tell you, that right there is worth every FAQ ever written. I mean, the Nobbler scrap launcher got better than it already was. I mean, I don't think you realize what this means. I mean, they're even more awesome. I mean, the only thing that make these sex wagons any better would be if GW added, you know, a few more Nobblers, I think, on the model. I think a couple more need to be added on, honestly.
As ammunition? I totally agree.
You know, somebody turn that mic off and talk to him anymore. But yeah, those are the FAQs that drop. So good stuff there. And so I like it. I like the way GW came out with the FAQs. Their response was timely. But let's get into the topic that I got to tell you. I the closing thought today is going to tie into this a little bit. So I'm not going to let this bug me. But I do want to put rest the big news topic that seems to still be fluttering around, and that's the square bases. And I'm going to pose a question to both yourself, Steve, and to you, Randy, and to all of our listeners here as far as thoughts on this. But you know, let old Uncle Grimdark here kind of pontificate here for about a minute, and then I want to hear what you guys have to say. Because, Steve, I know that you got, you know, a month of Sunday of stuff to say about this, right?
Yeah, that goes without saying.
Right. And Randy, I'm sure, you know, Randy, you're a stud in the community, man. This had to kind of, I'm sure you got some sideways stuff to say, right?
Totally.
All right. Well, here we go. And I want to say my suspicion that GW would bring back this Warhammer Fantasy Battles game has been around since 2017. You know, we've spoken about this long before the official announcement on this very show. We've spoken about it long before the official announcement last week. And, you know, last Thursday, prior to last Friday's notice by GW that they were bringing back Warhammer Fantasy Battles of some sort, Grimdark Live was first to report on last Thursday's show. And it was our strong suspicion and belief that this would be the case among all the other goofy rumors. You know, these rumors were, you know, squares are going to be replacing round bases in the product boxes. It might be a chess set. There were a few other ones I don't care to remember. And we knew. Here at Grimdark Live, we knew that indeed GW was bringing back this version of Warhammer Fantasy Battles. And I know that up to now, the web, the blogs, the articles, and shows by every type of glue-sniffing figure fondler out there has already pontificated on how shocked they are on this recent news. I mean, needless to say, I can at least speak for myself. I've never been shocked. But I'd like to take a more realistic approach to this, a more sobering approach to this. And I'll end with a question to both Steve and Randy, and inadvertently to all of you, all of our listeners. You know, Steve, I'm going to put you on the spot here for a second. Last week, you said something very profound. And in that statement, I think it embodies your character and the blatant fact that you're just a better man than I am. You really are a person of very good merit. And you stated, and I quote, GW would never punch down. And I think this is the exact phrase you made when questioned the idea that GW was attempting to blitzkrieg the market. Do you remember that?
Yes.
So I began to reflect on the timeline. Because of that one statement, I began to reflect on the timeline of where we are now. And I did this to put everything into perspective, like we had hinted to in last week's show, a day before the official release. So here we go. Indulge me, please. Indulge Uncle Grimdark for just a few minutes here. And you know, to all of you listeners that were around, you know, in rank and flank days, and to you, Steve, and to you, Randy, this is going to be a little bit of an ear rash, so please bear with me. In 2014, GW embarked on a six-month narrative system game called End Times, which caused many folks to spend hundreds of dollars worth of books, to pretty much their existing 8th edition players, that would only end with their game being completely discontinued, worlds destroyed. In 2015, GW officially terminated Warhammer Fantasy Battles and ordered all rules to be pulled from the shelves of GW stores, of course. You know, independent stores could do whatever they wanted. But that had to happen immediately upon announcement. And I think I remember the community being shocked by that, too. You know, GW then replaced it with a game that was totally different in the game that we all know and love right now called Age of Sigmar. They promised that you could use all of your models and you wouldn't need to modify them. That still didn't stop that one guy from burning his Dark Elf army, and I bet right now he feels like a real asshat. But as an appeasement, GW stated, "Don't worry, folks. Bases don't matter. Play away." So in 2016, GW purged armies from their games and shelves, making many collections unusable. Tomb Kings, Bretonians, my beloved Chaos Ogres went the way of the dinosaur. And they were unusable in regular games, and most game organizers started requiring all models to be used on round bases. A lot of tournaments. Adepticon went that route. Both things broken, I guess inadvertently and in some directly, on GW's part, both promises. So by the end of 2016, the rank and flank community, as I like to call them, was fractured in many different directions by GW's actions. Many people playing Kings of War, Ninth Age, and many people stuck with the older, you know, version of Warhammer Fantasy Battles. And I will say this, and you've heard me say this on the show before, I've never cared for the Ninth Age. I didn't understand why they were playing it, why they just didn't play. And I don't really want to get into that as a topic. I've always figured Ninth Age was evil, awful brand X. But regardless, why not just stick with Warhammer Fantasy Battles? But I digress. So here we are in 2017 now. And Steve, Randy, you guys kind of following the bouncing ball here of what I'm rambling on with?
Sure.
So yep. In 2017, GW started telling TOs, including those TOs at Adepticon, the biggest event in the United States, that they had to drop support of the Ninth Age in order to get any kind of support by GW, leading many events to drop Ninth Age without any explanation. Now, again, I don't care for Ninth Age, but I'm just calling a fact here. You know, and once again, severely fracturing, I guess you can consider fracturing the community rather than just making a decision about their own products. Because at that time, we were a skirmish game, round bases, rank and flank was gone. But by 2018, communities, and again, folks, these are just facts here. By 2018, communities of Kings of War and Ninth Age were putting on dozens of events in the U.S. that were, you know, pretty big in comparison as pretty much any Warhammer Fantasy Battles events from the past. Now, fast forward now to 2019. This has been a long year for Ninth Age. They've kind of gotten Shylocked, and that's okay. They're evil, awful brand X to me. But in 2019, a couple of weeks after a new edition of Kings of War was released, and I have to admit, of amazing quality and community, you know, receptions to it, I don't play the game personally, but hey, I call it the way I see it. GW announced that they were making some kind of new Warhammer Fantasy Battles edition without any details, and by the way, in 3 years, it's going to be coming out. Because they had not started even designing this game yet. That's my perception. No one told me that, but I think that that's the case. They literally made the decision and announced it right away in a very, I'll say, un-GW fashion here recently. You know, why did they do this? That was, I guess, my first question. My premonition, I guess, is the best way to put it. The way I called it on last week's show is to stem the tide of more people picking up Kings of War for the new edition or wait for the Warhammer Fantasy Battles game that they know nothing about. I called it then, and I figured that they were going to try to come into the market, albeit the 3 years is kind of cockamamie to me, but I'm sure they got a plan how they're going to do all this. But you know what's funny? The reason why I kind of said all this and chewed up 3.5 minutes just now was mainly because I got to tell you, I'm sick of the pettiness and I'm sick of the way the community just kept gnawing at this. And you want to know something? For a group of people in the Age of Sigmar community who have moved on and won't go back, this group seems awfully damn preoccupied with a game that might exist in 3 years and we don't even know what fashion it is. So anyway, that's my news topic news kind of thing. I'm jumping off my soapbox here, but I want to say this to you, Steve, and to you, Randy. Is this a case of GW attempting to hurt the communities of gamers and potential customers for their own end, or does this make GW is GW a good company or a bad company in this kind of an ordeal? I mean, I'll throw it out to whoever wants to answer that one first.
I don't see any need to even think about Warhammer the Old World until 3 years from now, quite frankly. And I find the whole concept unimaginative and boring. Number one, you destroyed your world. You're the ones that took, and you meaning GW, you took 35 years of creativity. You took 35 years of blood, sweat, and tears of creative giants, and you threw it all away in one fell swoop. And now all of a sudden you expect the game community to go back to the world that you destroyed after thousands of gamers have sold off beautifully painted armies because they had been quote unquote discontinued.
Yeah.
And you want us to go back into that same trap again? And to that, I say the answer is no. I moved on to Age of Sigmar. This is the world you created. We bought into your new world. You said this is where we're going to play now. This is where we're going to play. I'm not jumping into the next sandbox, especially one that's not going to be built for another 3 years. So right now, I'm just kind of reserving judgment on anything related to Warhammer the Old World until I see more details. I don't know what it's going to be, what it's going to look like. I assume the figures are going to be the same size. They're going to be the 28mm standard, you know, that we use in fantasy.
Right, yeah.
But unless this game is something that, you know, is just completely new and knocks our socks off, I have zero interest in it. And I thought it was a very lame way to introduce this game, especially 3 years out. I mean, what do you think? People are actually going to be sitting there like at game stores waiting 3 years? I mean,
I think it could prevent people from indulging in these other games.
I just think that it's a complete waste of time. I mean, right now with 3 years out, that process is so far from completion. I don't know why anyone would even bother worrying about it right now. I think it's a complete waste of time.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, like I said before, I wasn't jumping on my soapbox simply to kind of, you know, to kind of rant and rave there, even though I did. And I'm not trying to be petty about it, because that's going to kind of touch on some of the closing thoughts here, but later in the show. But my point about this was, I'm kind of over the whole thing. I mean, we kind of knew, and for us,
I'm totally disinterested.
Yeah, and I guess the whole point what I'm saying to the community at large here is,
Go about your business,
man. Yeah. You know, and here's the thing.
Don't worry about it.
We have a great game in Age of Sigmar. And here's the thing. You know what? If Rank and Flank kind of, you know, tickles your funny spot, you know, go ahead and play it. But
knock your socks off, have fun.
Yeah. And Randy, I mean, what are your 2 cents in a tin can on kind of the whole square base rambling conversation that just kind of won't seem to go away?
Yeah, I think they announced it way too early. Like, I think they're, you know, they just like they released Dreadfleet to, you know, to compete with Spartan Games, Uncharted Seas. You know, they just did it to, you know, try to, you know, quell a small, you know, rising of fans or whatever. Like if you do like a rank and flank, there's no reason why you can't open the old books and play games and enjoy the old game. You know, nostalgia wise, you know, I know a lot of people that, you know, went back just, you know, just after playing like Total War, Total War II, you know, Warhammer, you know, it just kicks the, you know, the nostalgia in and, you know, played a few games or whatever, but like, you know, to do it this far in advance, whatever, like it's pretty much for me, it's going to be wait and see. Like, mm-hmm. I'll look at it in 2 years to see like, you know, what's happening, whatever. But like, you know, I still have all my old books, you know, I have miniatures that, you know, I won't put on rounds because they, you know, there's no, you know, there's a compendium for them and they're not in the match play book, you know. Yes, Warhammer Legends is coming out to, you know, supposedly give all the old stuff some rules or whatever, but you know, it's like I said, it's all wait and see for me right now. It's just too far in advance.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I think the biggest thing that people need to do is just understand that, you know, the game, the hobby, and all that kind of stuff. It's, you know, for us, it's Age of Sigmar, and I think that it was the best thing for the community was to move on. So that was my 2 cents. I kind of wanted to kind of report on that. I'd been listening to a lot of stuff on the boards, you know, recently, and I didn't want to just do the spaz thing like a lot of other shows did and just jump on the air right away and be like, oh my God, I'm so shocked. Let's talk about, you know, the square bases. And I didn't want to do that. I kind of felt that was just kind of, I don't know, joining the fray, I guess. I didn't want to get into the whole conversational rugby scrum. So I thought I would just kind of wait for this old platform here to kind of put the 2 cents in. But that's it. That's what we got for the news. Hey gang, I wanted to take a break in today's show to introduce one of our sponsors and a great store for all of your hobby needs. That's GameStorm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois. Open 7 days a week, 12 to 12.
GameStorm Gaming has got you covered for all of your hobby and gaming needs. They got Magic the Gathering, War Machine, X-Wing, Game of Thrones, Force of Will card game, PC gaming and repair, Warhammer 40K, and Age of Sigmar, and a ton more. Grab paints, brushes, cases, dice, and a lot more at GameStorm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois.
Stop in and see John and the gang there at GameStorm Gaming, located at 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, or check them out on their website at GameStormGaming.com. Again, that's www.GameStormGaming.com.
They also stay open past midnight for special cases and events, so get over there and get your nerd on with GameStorm Gaming. 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, 630-243-9330. Again, that's GameStorm Gaming, 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois.
GameStorm Gaming is a proud sponsor of Grimdark Live. We hope to see you there. Guys, we got an awesome topic, and Steve, I know that you're ready to get your Trogoth on, man, and start talking about some of the differences with some of the destruction factions and comparing them. So let's get at this, man. You got the stage, brother.
Well, I think what prompted this was our conversation that we had a couple weeks ago, where we were talking about like what would be a great beginner's army for a new player, you know. And we always have said that destruction is probably one of the best armies for a new player coming into the game.
Yeah.
And I think with the final release of Destruction Forces, because we really do have a full faction now of destruction.
You're not kidding, brother.
I don't think we have anything else floating around out there unless they come up with something new. So I think that we're at a point right now where we can really take a look at Destruction and say, what do we think about this as a faction? Like, what are its strengths, what are its weaknesses. And one of the key points I wanted to make as we roll through these three armies is, when we pick an army, whether it's orcs or gloomspites or the ogres, what are the perceived, as we talked about, what are the perceived weaknesses of your army? Like, when people look at your army, what do they see as a weakness? And then what do people see as a potential strength?
Okay.
And I think if we roll through each army and we kind of look at it from that point of view, it might kind of help us focus the conversation.
Sure.
So I guess we could start off with your ogres.
Okay, love it.
Because they are the most recent book, and I think that's what people want to talk about, and I don't want to be boring and talk about my own Gloomspite army because, you know, we're from the Midwest. We don't like to talk about ourselves.
There you go. There you go.
Let's take a look at ogres.
Sure.
Let's take a look at them as a faction. And I guess what I want to talk about is, what are the builds for ogres that we think we're going to see on tables in the very near future?
Well,
what are people putting together? And I guess from that point of view, we need to talk to you a little bit because you play them.
Yeah, I do. I do. And I can talk to this now. Now, granted, you know, I first like to kind of take a quick second and say, I was really, really, really happy with, you know, this book. You know, when it first came out, it was the first time in a long time that I was truly elated, probably since my Beast of Chaos book came out, that I was really elated, you know, and I loved how this book was not to be outdone by the other destruction factions. You know,
it's a solid book.
Yeah. They finally brought the Gutbusters and the Beastclaw Raiders together. Just like they did, you know, they combined the other books in Orc War Clans and Gloomspites.
Sure.
But I played this army mostly in the past, from my beloved Nobblers, which, you know, I won't get into that. I won't spaz out on anyone and talk about my love affair with those little bastards right now. I will get into that later, but,
And so will I, because I think there's a point that I want to make about the Nobblers, but go ahead.
Yeah. And I played Beastclaw Raiders for the longest time. I had a Thunder Tusk list, you know, with the old dirty snowball, and mm-hmm. I played that at Adepticon last year. But now, here and now, we've got this new hotness, right? And this, as I like to call it, the new ogres, you know, the new and improved ogres. And, you know, the first thing people got to understand when they play ogres, or why do you want to get into ogre maw tribes, you know, because you really like to beat the crap out of things and eat stuff. And that's what this army really brings to the table. For the first time in a long time, ogres are feared again. And
oh, yes, they are.
Yeah. And, you know, you really want to bring the whole new meaning to the word pain. And you are going to just really have the flexibility that you didn't have before. See, ogres always had the ability to punch face. But now, with what the book offers with the allegiance abilities like trampling charge, they finally got that back. I like what they did with their model counts, you know, that ogres are now considered two models apiece. Or,
and you know, I think we also are seeing a precursor of a new rule.
Exactly.
I truly believe that, because what you're going to see in AOS 3.0 is you're going to see them go back, and Randy, I know you remember this, you're going to see them go back to what we used to call unit strength, where the ogres are going to, because they're bigger models, they're going to be worth the same unit strength as a big fat chunk of, like, goblins or something. So, for instance, if you have a unit of, like, 40 goblins, and you have a unit of 12 ogres, bulls, their unit strength is 48, because they have 48 wounds for that unit, mm-hmm. whereas the goblins only have 40.
Right.
But the ogres, because of their size, are going to have a higher unit strength because of their sheer bulk.
Yeah. Yeah, and already in this book here, they're calling it Might Makes Right. And you know,
and
so
that's what you're going to see in the future editions of AOS. I believe that is a precursor to a future rule.
Yeah, and I think without stealing the thunder here from Steve, because this is really his topic, and this is kind of the world that Steve has delved in the destruction world, we're not really going to get into the war scrolls and the minutiae of that. You know, if you guys want that,
read
buy the book,
yeah.
You know, or steal the book if you're a clever thief. We're not promoting that, but hey, you know, whatever. So here's what I want to get into. Let's get into the lists. Can we do this?
Sure.
So what we're seeing right now, and folks, what I'm about to say about the Ogres is my opinion. Okay. And I think a lot of the people on here are going to share opinions. Now, you know, different strokes for different folks. You know, if you like a more casual type of list, if you like a more competitive type of list, if you like a, you know, what the heck type of list, you know, hey, more power to you. But what I'm going to talk to is I'm going to try to put some thoughts on this. I've been seeing a lot of lists out there with Ogre Gluttons in it, formerly the Ogre Bulls. And I'll tell you a real common list that I see. I usually see a Tyrant. Everyone's taking Blood Gullet as their Maw Tribe. Tyrant, yes. Slaughtermaster, and a Butcher. I don't see a lot of double Slaughtermasters, but I usually see two units, two big fat chunks of units of Ogre Gluttons, you know, maxed out at 12.
12 strong, yes.
And then I'm seeing Iron Guts,
yes.
But in small numbers. I usually see between 4 to 8 now that they come in 4. I see generally 4 Iron Guts and usually bigger units of Lead Belchers. And I think that that's a mistake, and we don't need to get into that too much. And then, of course, the battalion, the Gorman battalion, has been very popular. So that's a list that I've been seeing not only on the boards, but you know, even at the you know, out gaming, you know, different game storms. I see a lot of people playing that type of Ogre list, and to me, I think it's kind of fool's gold a little bit, because if you look at the book, a lot of the buffs that happen from, you know, the different Maw tribes, you know, the Blood Gullet Maw tribe, you know, they got some command abilities or Bloodbath, for instance, where I think you can buff Blood Gullet Ogre Gluttons, you know, that are within 12 inches of the Butcher, you know, and one of the buffs I think is you can reroll wound rolls for attacks with your melee weapons. Meat Fist does that. All the buffs seem to be surrounding the Gluttons, of course, in the more gut buster type of tribes. And I think that in a way, folks, my opinion, and then Steve, I'm going to shut up here because that's just one example of a list. My opinion, that's fool's gold are going with lots of Gluttons. So, and it's fool's gold for a couple of reasons. One, you can do what you can as far as buffing them out with two-hand weapons. I think rerolling ones is, I'm going to roll a lot more ones than I am sixes. I'll tell you that damn much right now. And I like the reroll. Number two, though, they got a 5+ save. And Steve, as you're probably going to tell the story, they go up against something with a -2 rend, and it's even -1 rend.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean,
ka-dunk, ka-dunk.
So let's do that comparative analysis, because we did have destruction on destruction this past weekend.
We did. All right, let's hear it.
And okay, so here's pretty much what we've surmised from these battles. You had 12 Gluttons going up against 12 Rockgut Tragoth. The Gluttons came in, and I believe they only killed one or two trolls. The trolls returned fire, and they absolutely wiped both units of Gluttons off the table. Like, they literally cleaned out the entire unit. I think it was, down to one guy in both scenarios, both in Nick's army and your army?
Yeah, exactly.
So here is what, and this kind of goes into what we're going to be talking about tonight. Destruction, out of all of the different armies that are out there and available to people, you're going to see the greatest amount of high damage troops found in destruction. And that is rightfully so.
You're talking about high damage output. Yeah, just to clarify.
Yes, high damage output units.
Right.
Because there are very few units in this game that do damage 3.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot afford to get into the long fight with a unit that has damage 3 because they're going to wipe you off the table.
That's
and
very
as
true.
As we've talked about, even if my trolls only get 5 or 6 hits through, that's still 15 to 18 wounds that you're pulling out of a unit that you can't afford.
Exactly.
And so when they hit stuff, they go through it like crap through a goose.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a whole lot that you can do to stop them. So using Gluttons, I agree with you, is kind of a foolish way to use the Ogres. Right. I think that multiple smaller units of Iron Guts would be much more effective.
Right.
An 8-man unit of Iron Guts, and just an 8-man unit of Iron Guts, can decimate almost anything on the table. So why would you waste all of those points in Gluttons? And I know that, you know, you're going to have somebody come out and they're going to say, well, we want to hold objectives. Well, that's great. But if there's nothing alive on the enemy side of the table to hold an objective, then you're going to win the game.
Yeah.
And Iron Guts are certainly going to clean anything off the table that they hit.
Yeah.
Especially if they have a buff of hitting on 2+.
That's right. That's right. And I go back to this, what I said in the beginning of my little commentary here. I think it's fool's gold. I think if you look at the different,
yes.
And folks, for people that aren't familiar with the Ogre book, they have different tribes. Maw tribes are known. And in the Gutbusters specifically, which the units of the Gluttons and the Iron Guts and things we're talking about are of the Gutbuster ilk. They've got Meat Fist. They've got Blood Gullet. They've got Underguts. And it seems that
How much is a unit of 12 ogres? 12 gluttons. How much do they cost?
Well, a full 12-man unit is 400 points.
Okay, so I want to touch on that. Okay?
Yeah.
So indulge me if you will.
Sure.
You have a unit of 400 points, 48 wounds. They only do 2 damage each, and you say, well, only 2 damage, that's pretty high. It is.
Right.
But limited amount of attacks because the range is only 1.
Yes. So, right. That's
here's
a good
the
point.
Problem. You have a 5+ armor save and no rend. So
exactly.
Against most elite troops, especially something like the trolls, if I hit you and if I wound you, you're losing 3 wounds.
Yes.
No matter what.
Right.
Now, in this particular circumstance, I was hit by a full unit of 12 gluttons. My trolls swung back and caused 15 wounds. Of mm-hmm. which none of the ogres were able to save. And so you are literally talking 45 wounds. And I think the response from you said it all. Because
yeah.
You sat there and you looked at this and you said, okay, at least to buy an Iron Guts, I might have a save here.
Yeah, and that's what led, and folks, and that's kind of what led us down this conversation. And let me kind of back up here because, you know, unfortunately, a lot of you folks out there don't understand the Trogoth army that Steve plays. And I'm not going to get into the minutia of that either, but Steve is our local troll. You know, he as a matter of fact, I think Randy and I were talking before the show. We think that the Rockgut Trogoths were actually modeled after Steve. We think he went out there in England and he posed in a bikini and that's how they got this actually modeled. It's a striking resemblance. I got to say that.
I don't know if this should be taken as a compliment or not.
It's a very beautiful model, but here's the thing. So these Rockgut Trogoths, you know, for everyone out there, they got 2 attacks apiece, 3s by 3s, -2 damage 3. Let me just repeat the end of that. -2 damage 3.
And what is their range?
2 inches.
So
in a unit of 12 of these big bastards,
they're all striking.
Both ranks. So you got 24, and I think the leader, the boss, whatever, gets.
No, they have no bosses. They're too stupid to have bosses.
Yeah, right. So just to be honest with you, the gluttons didn't stand a chance. They really didn't. And you know what? They got completely just eliminated. And for me, I went back and I said to myself, okay, you know what? I could easily take a tyrant, a butcher, and a slaughtermaster, you know, same HQ to use a 40K term. I could take 2 units of 12 Iron Guts for 660 points apiece, and a smaller unit of 4 Iron Guts for 220. And if you think about it this way, folks, let me just kind of point it out this way, and then I'm going to shut up, Steve. I give you my worthless word. Iron Guts have reach, and I think that if a lot of folks out there, you know, this game is prefaced a lot about can you reach that, you know, and they got 2 inches on their weapon. They got 3 attacks apiece, 3s by 3s, -1 damage 3.
Yes. Whenever you're playing a larger model like Iron Guts, you have to make sure, any kind of large troop, you have to make sure that if you're going to take them, that they are a model that has at least a 2-inch range.
Right.
You don't ever want a situation where you have big guys, the big troops, monstrous infantry, as we used to call them,
sure,
standing in a back row doing absolutely nothing. And unfortunately, that's what you get when you take gluttons.
Right. Right.
You're not getting those back row attacks.
Exactly. And just wasted wounds.
Yes. It's wasted points for your army. If you're and the reason we're having this conversation is because I don't want some guy who's thinking about playing ogres to go out and buy 24 gluttons, because you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
Because it's not just trolls out there that are going to be smashing through your lines. It's going to be other stuff as well.
Oh, don't even get me started. We're going to talk about the Orc War Clans here in a minute.
Oh,
you want, I mean, you want to talk about another army that hits harder than winter on welfare. I'm telling you, these guys right here are the
one. And so I want to save that guy that's going out and buying, you know, an ogre army, especially buying up all those gluttons. You can be more effective by just putting a bunch of multiple four-man iron gut units on the table than you ever could taking all these gluttons, which are going to be completely useless in most cases.
Right.
There's no rend on them, and they are only damaged too. So if you have six gluttons in the front row, you're probably going to get, just remember, what is their hit? A three? They're hitting on a three?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're probably going to get...
And three attacks, by the way.
How many? What? Three attacks?
Three attacks, threes by threes, negative one damage, three.
So there you go. So you have three attacks apiece plus a bite.
Yeah.
Now, you may think that's great, but I'm telling you right now, in the past 2 weeks, I've gone up against two ogre armies that were virtually identical. Both armies had two 12-man units of gluttons. And in both cases, they were off the table in one round of combat against my trolls.
Right.
Off the table.
Yeah, and so let's rear this back here just so to, you know, catch people up, because I do want to get into the Orc War Clans here soon too, as well.
But, well, I want to mention one more thing though.
Oh no, I'm not trying to rush. I'm just saying.
I mean about the ogres.
Gotcha. Go.
Okay, so there's another option for the ogre book, the Maw Tribes book, and that's your nobblers.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say that.
Well, you may be surprised what I say. This goes back to what I refer to as perceived weaknesses. So when you take a unit of nobblers and you throw them on the table, the perceived weakness is that they're just a bunch of trashy goblin troops that can't be effective. Okay, that may be true of one unit. Now I want you to take that and times it by five or by six. Okay, mm-hmm. So now you're going to have, you have how many five units of those guys?
I have 60 man units, five of them.
Okay, so you're talking now
300
nobblers on the table.
That's it.
300 nobblers on the table. So once again, an army that has a perceived weakness now actually has a hidden strength.
That's right.
Because once you get that nobbler army on those objectives, and this is for anyone out there who's, you know, thinking of using nobblers, once you get those nobblers on an objective, you're talking 60 models that are going to be within range of that, possibly within range of that objective. Now, you may not be able to get all of them in, but you're going to get enough in that you're going to block your enemy from ever being able to get up there and take that objective away from you.
Right.
So you don't have to win the battle in combat. You just have to outlast your opponent.
That's right.
And when they slaughter one unit of 60, they're going to have another unit of 60 sitting right behind them that are going to come up and take the objective again.
Right. Yeah, and so, let me just put these awesome little bastards into perspective here. You know, when you look at them, you think, okay, six plus save and a four bravery.
Right. Perceived weakness. People think that they suck.
But with a 10-man unit, now their whole that whole unit is a 10 bravery. Right? Now, I mean, without getting into the minutiae of the details, you take a tyrant, he slaps him on the ass. Now there's no battle shock on him.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah. And here's the other thing, folks. I want to be very pointing on this. They have a shooting attack that's fours by fives and it's sharp stuff, and you got to remember that's 8 inches. So if you take a 25 millimeter base six deep, that's roughly 6 inches. That entire unit is going to be shooting sharp stuff at you on fours by fives. Law of averages states if I'm shooting 45 to 60 shots of sharp stuff at whatever's in front of me,
you're going to hit half.
I'm going to hit half. And you know what? That's going to do enough damage to dwindle something down. And that's all I need, because then over 20, they're getting an additional attack. Or I'm sorry.
Well,
if the units actually has more than 10 models, they're getting one additional attack in melee. So now that's two attacks, five by fives. At least the first two ranks are going to be slugging it out with you.
Yes. And because they're on the 25s, they're going to be fighting in two ranks.
Right.
So it's, you know, like I said, once again, we go back to that term, perceived weakness is actually a hidden strength.
Yeah, I love that term, by the way. That's a good way to put it.
You know, and like I said, it just goes back to what kind of an ogre army you're planning on building. So if I were going to round out the Ogre army, if I were just going to put, like, you know, put a final cap on this army.
Sure.
I would say that if you're going to play Ogres, you want to go with multiple small units of Iron Guts. And I would go with, or if you're going to go the, you know, the crazy route like Pat, go with an entire army of Nobblers, because they're not going to, no army is going to break through those Nobblers in five turns. It's statistically impossible.
Yeah.
And you're not going to break them, because if they have, you have to remember, for every 10 models they have in the unit, that's plus one to their bravery when it comes time for battle shock.
That's right.
So even if you come up and kill 10, okay, you're still having fun with a really high bravery. And by that time, the tyrant's already going to have smack them over the head and make them unbreakable anyways.
Right.
So.
And you know, here's the other thing too, folks, which you got to remember too, is going back to the Iron Gut list, you know, for 1980 out of 2000 points, which is 2000 points, obviously is your typical game. You know, you can have a tyrant, a butcher, and a slaughtermaster, two units of 12 Iron Guts and a smaller unit of four Iron Guts. Now that literally only gives you, six drops. And
or you could not care about drops at all and take all those 12 man units and break them up into 3-4
man
units.
Yeah, I figure as long as you're probably going to be going second, who the hell cares?
Who cares?
Yeah.
You're going to have plenty of troops that are going to be high damage outputting troops.
You know,
with 16 wounds per unit.
And as a side note, I'd like to kind of just touch with this, you know, kind of maybe springboard to the tyrant. Now the tyrant, I don't think is as good as he used to be. But I think
he doesn't need to be.
Well, but he's still, what I was happy to see is the tyrant still punches way above his weight class. And this guy,
I think that's why you're seeing so many people playing the slaughtermasters and the butchers more.
Yeah.
You're seeing more wizards in this army because people understand that the strength of this army is coming from the buffs, from
right.
the wizards.
Yeah.
From the stew pot, you know.
But you're wondering. Yeah. And again, you're right. But I'm wondering if you won't see a couple of rogue tyrants that you could just slam into a unit, because they now get attacks with all of their melee weapons, their Thunder Mace, their glaive, their Gulping Bite. They get all of it. So I'm wondering, you know, for, you know, 160 points, you know, would, you know, and eight wounds, would you not see a couple of these rogue tyrants
sure.
that someone is just going to torpedo
like,
into an enemy unit?
Yeah. It's like any small unit that like, even like a giant. Anything that can go up and stop a unit from coming towards an objective for a turn or two is valuable.
Right.
If you have a tyrant that's out there mixed in with all those Iron Gut units, and he decides there's a unit that's coming in that he's got to put a block on, you know, charge him and block him from coming sure. in, why not? Because unless they kill him, he's standing there. And that's another turn now that they've wasted that they can't get through him. So
yeah.
a lot of this game is blocking.
Oh yeah.
That's
oh,
why
yeah.
you're seeing so many people playing these little small units out there. Or they're using spells that can do the job of small units. Such as
yeah.
Scuttletide and such as Palisade.
Yeah. 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 I gotta tell you, Scuttletide is probably the most
Yeah, it's one of the best spells in the game and people don't even know it.
You're not kidding. As someone that's fought against that thing quite a bit, I hate that thing, but I also love it. So, you know, I tip my hat to that. So let's keep this rolling. They're cousins, you know, they've got,
ironically enough, you're looking at an army that, most people, once again, false perceptions, they perceive orcs to be a brainless go forward and kill army when they don't understand that this army is now a very highly tactical army. And you have to use these orcs at the right time, and you have to move them at the right time. You have to have the right spells on them. You have to have the right buffs, the right troops in position. This is very much a tactical army now.
Right.
And it gives the false perception of being a traditional old-fashioned destruction army, and it's not anymore.
Interesting.
This is a very tactical army now.
So let's kind of expound on that, because you know you wouldn't know it by looking at it. I mean, when you think about it, you say
no,
to someone,
you wouldn't know it.
Well, you say to somebody, why? I mean, even in their own terminology, the Great Wah. You know why? You know, people want to play the Iron
All
Jaws
right. so
or the Bone Splitters.
So let's take a look. let's take a look at the war clans now, and let's take a look what people are using to great success. People are now using the double cabbage. They're taking those cabbages, you know, our maw crushers,
right?
And they are moving across the table and are charging on turn one. Now, once again, and I'm going to talk about this when I talk about my troll army. Once again, you have a situation where people are not expecting that army to be in their face on turn one.
True.
But when they are on your face in turn one, it's too late. Because if you let two maw crushers get into your line, you're done. And they'll sweep right through your line. I don't care what you are. The only thing that's going to hold up against them are going to be something like Fire Slayers with a 4-up ward save, or anything that has a 5-up ward save. But anything else, you're in trouble.
Yeah, and just kind of go back. That's kind of the essence of this game. You know, Rendon ward saves, right?
I've been saying it for a year now.
Yeah.
I will never play another army again unless it has rend and a ward save. I just will not play them anymore.
Yeah.
You have to have that secondary save because so much stuff in this game now gets through that armor. And if you don't have a ward save, you're just going to be taking buckets of your troops off the table.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know.
So let's look at the strength of these orcs.
Okay.
We have high speed. We have high damage output, which is a characteristic of destruction. You have the piggies now, which are much stronger.
Yes. Okay?
You have savage orcs now, a savage orc variation, which is called Dragfoot, which can now eliminate all of, once again, getting back into these highly tactical armies. Now you have an army that can literally erase the aftersave.
Yes.
Of
yeah.
any single army in this game.
Yeah, so I see now, dual rogue idol.
Yeah.
Dual rogue idol with Dragfoot. It is very sick.
Oh, it's disgusting. Because now, oh God, Randy, that is disgusting.
That is disgusting, yes.
For folks listening, talk a little bit about why that's disgusting, though.
Okay, so the rogue idol has 10 attacks at full life. Threes by threes, -2/3 damage. He, with being Dragfoot, he ignores the after saves.
Now imagine him in on Fire Slayers. Now imagine him in on Nurgle. Now imagine him in on the Undead. Now imagine him in on Trolls.
Yeah.
He is absolutely a single model killing machine.
Yeah, right.
And you can have, and the scary part is, you can have two of them.
Yes, they're cheap enough now. They got rid of the, they gave him all the keywords, but they got rid of the half wound thing, but he still has the after save too.
Okay.
So, yeah, he ignores the. Okay, so one thing to notice about Dragfoot also is I see a couple people playing it wrong. It only does normal wounds and not mortal wounds. Like if you have a Dragfoot guy and he casts Arcane Bolt and does mortal wounds, they actually still get their after save because it only ignores the wound saves and not mortal wound saves.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
but
like,
still, that's huge.
But still, it's huge because your run is going through their armor and then they don't get their after save and it's, you know, three damage apiece.
Now imagine two of those on the table fighting in unison.
Yes, and it's a caster buff, so it makes, you know, with the orc shenanigans, you could get a +3 to +3 to cast off of your orc shaman.
Just disgusting.
Yeah. It's the rogue idol is, you know.
That's an army where you have to know when to strike. You have to
strike. Yeah.
Yep. Model placement.
Yep.
So it's a highly tactical army. The ogres can get away with going across the table and just smashing anything that's in front of them because they have such high damage output and there's so many multiple units of them if you're doing them in units of four, like the Iron Guts.
Sure.
But the orcs, that once again, that perceived weakness, people think, oh, they're just a bunch of big, stupid orcs. You know, they have no armor. I'm just going to slaughter them. And then you're like, wait a minute. Why are they now in my front line on turn one?
Yeah, right.
And it's all over. It's all over. Because if they get a hand of Gork off, forget it.
Yeah.
It's over. They're going to be in your face. And and just all the abilities that they have for movement, how they can be in your face. Like I said, on turn one, you can't take on that much heavy hitting. Not to mention the fact that those Maw Crushers each do 8 mortal wounds on a 5-up when they charge in at full strength. So imagine 2 Maw Crushers now coming in and 16 dice. And you're looking at, and 5s are mortal wounds.
And remember that the special character one, it literally says all destruction. It doesn't say like all orcs and stuff. So like, it is fantastic. And then also like another thing for everybody playing Savage Orcs, you know, a unit of 8 big stabbers is absolutely fantastic.
Oh, they're devastating. They're devastating. Talk about them for a sec, Randy.
Well, they, like playing against them the first time, like, they literally, like, I didn't know they could run and charge in the same turn. Yeah. So, like, the setup, whatever, you know, I've been playing against an all orc army, or all savage orcs. So he's not playing the big wah, you know. He likes to have his, you know, after save for savage orcs, whatever. But, you know, a unit of 8 of them, you know, like I said, it's the same thing with the dual rogue idols and 8 stabbers, and then the rest of them are actual shooters. You know, they actually, you know, the spears weren't really working out for them, and so they we've been trying savage orcs with bows for the actual battle line. So
yeah, it is amazing the amount of devastation that can come out of this new orc army, and thank God Evan's playing them, because but once again, so now if we're talking in terms of player strength and player ability, I would say that you're out of all of our destruction armies, your ogres are probably going to be the best entry army for destruction.
I would say
orcs are actually now the way that they're designed and the way the synergy works with them, I think actually now orcs are for your more advanced destruction player.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that to a certain extent too. I think there's too many moving parts with the orc war clans and the Gloomspite Gits, but I think if you were to, what's the word I want to use here? Separate and isolate certain units. Like if you were to play all Iron Jaws, that might have an ogre-y feel to it. You'll probably be easier to jump
into
that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously every army has its variations, but if we're talking the most common lists that people are playing, you're going to see a lot of people playing orcs with those Maw Crushers now.
I agree.
That's going to be the staple orc army, and it's probably going to be Big Wah.
Yes, and you know what's funny is I see a lot of people, like in past editions of this game, I don't know if it was just me or the local gaming scene around here, but orc players a lot of times always brought Gordrak, you know, and they love that.
Oh, and they still are.
Well, I see a lot of now people migrating toward just the regular old mega boss on a Maw Crusher.
Well, you're seeing people using Gordrak and a Maw Crusher Lord, like a regular one.
Oh, you mean the rest in tandem, the two killer, you know, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, apples, the double whammy.
Right. Yep.
And you know, what I think, and I got to be honest with you, the list that Evan is building right now doesn't have one Iron Jaw in it.
No, it doesn't need it. No. The list I've seen, the models he's playing, believe me, his army is going to be devastating if he plays it right.
Well, and he's already kind of he's already been. Let's put it this way: he's learning quickly. Let's put it that way. That army is going to be devastating. And what's neat about it is it doesn't fit the, how do I want to put this? The prototypical orc army that you're seeing now.
Yeah. And that's why I said it's the more advanced of the destruction armies.
Yeah. And I guess that's why I'm rounding about to agree with you on that, that I think that, you know, and who would ever think we'd all be sitting there talking about orcs as a thinking man's army.
They really are. They really are.
Yeah.
Which kind of slides us into the last of the destruction armies, which is the Gloomspite Gits.
The Gloomies, yeah.
Now, my personal favorite. If I were going to suggest the middle of the road army, the army that has a little bit for the beginner, but a little bit for the more advanced player, the Gloomies is the way to go. So your Gloomies are the army you would use if you were kind of that maybe a year or two into the hobby army. That's what Gloomies are. Yes, I do. I don't think Gloomies is a good starter army. I think that's an army for a destruction player that has been playing for at least a year or so.
Okay.
You need a little experience because, like you said, the Gloomspites have a lot of working parts. Now
they do.
You want to talk now? There's variations of the Gloom Spites. If you're going to make a more elite specialized army, then you're going to go with like my trolls, because you know I of course play a troll army, and that's one of the sub factions. I believe Randy put it best. It's one of the unique kind of sub factions that the Gloom Spites have to offer. But the real strength of the Gloom Spites is a more well-rounded list. Like if you're going to, I've heard the term check all the boxes for an army, Gloom Spites, that's from Doom and Darkness. That's a term he likes to use a lot, check all the boxes.
Yeah, he's got a great show.
Yo, phenomenal show, phenomenal. So Doom, if you're ever listening out there, we love you. The Gloom Spites can check all of the boxes for a well-rounded army. They can have the big units to hold objectives. They have the heavy hitters and the Mangler Squigs. They have a superior fighting lord with the Loon Boss on the Mangler. And then they have all the fanatics, the trolls, if you want to use them as just like a little hammer unit on the sides. So Randy, why don't you talk a little bit about the Gloom Spites, because you play mostly all of the boxes for the Gloom Spites, whereas I just play the hammer.
Yeah, so basically, they have the basic Moon Clan Grot, and you know all their allies are usually squig related. So you have the Mangler, the Squig Herds, the Boinger Grots. You know, all fantastic units for you know. The Squigs are pretty much the hammer to the Moon Clan, you know, just, you know, being able to stand on objective with, you know, anywhere between 20 to 60, you know,
and just goblins to kind of back or whatever. Up, Randy, I'm not trying to interrupt, but you're talking about the Squigs as an army that you play within the Gloom Spite Gits. That's kind of your,
right? Yeah, that's Randy's forte.
Right.
That's my, I enjoy the slightly more randomness, so, exactly. You know.
Yep. So
they do have random movement and some other stuff, and they're pretty sweet. And then the next faction I see a lot of people playing is the spiders. You know, you have the Ragnarok Shrine and the boss on Giant Spider, and you know, a well-rounded, like, you know, you could be, you know, a lot of mortal wound outputs with a lot of like fast two wound, you know, models that also have, you know, a little bit of shooting. So
yeah, the spiders are great.
Yeah, so that, you know, but yeah, they're moving and do
high
all that stuff.
Magic output too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, well, they got a ton of characters in there. And not to mention the you know, you can even throw in a troll hag in there. I mean, there is a lot of
it's the most
Zarbag, you've got the Madcap Shamans, you've got the
Molog.
You got the Fungoid Cave Shamans, probably some of the best shamans or wizards in the game, I would have to say.
Yeah. Oh yeah, because he has after save and, you know, be able to cast, and then you have access to access to Itchy Nuisance, which is a very necessary thing for all the go first armies that are you know, going around or whatever. So
right.
It's a very well rounded army. It's probably one of the most well rounded armies in the game right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Randy, yeah. I didn't hear bring up Squid Gabbas, man. Their artillery.
Oh yeah, they got a little bit of everything. Like, those are nice because don't require line of sight. Just hey, your character is within range. You know, I'll shoot at him. You know,
yeah,
and you know, it's, you know, pretty much a melee. You know, a good melee squig attack and like being able, you know, through the arrow. You know,
it's funny. We completely went, you know, looned over the best mage in the game, and that's Scragrot, the Loon King. You know, as far as in the Gloom Spite army, we kind of forgot about the king, man. At any rate, sorry.
Well, I think the best troop that they have in the game, magic-wise, is probably not Scragrot. I think it's those Fungoid Cave Shamans.
Yeah, at 90 points, and three anything, of them can outdo. Points. Like, you know, he has a lot of good rules and stuff, but you know, 200's a little, you know, 220.
Yeah, well, no, like, just saying that I like, you know, I think for the best bang for your buck, no pun intended, is definitely the Fungoid Cave Shamans. You know, 90 points apiece, you know,
and you see
plus.
Them in every Gloom Spite army. Every Gloom, I even use three of them in my troll army.
Yeah. Yeah.
And speaking of which, I think that when I first saw the Gloom Spite book come out, number one, I love Night Goblins. I one of my earliest armies was a Night Goblin army. But when I saw that I was going to be able to make a troll army, I just went insane. But the problem at the time is that when I built my first variation of the Trolls, they were too expensive point wise. And when they did that points drop, back in June?
Yeah. Yeah, with the general handbook. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It was just, it was just like game on. And now I think I have the army, one of the armies that I've always wanted to play. I love the idea, the concept of an army of trolls, solid trolls, like no, nothing else in the army but trolls, save for the heroes, you know? And I've got to say that the amount of damage that that army is capable of doing to my opponent just one round of combat, I just can't see another army right now that I'm interested in playing. Not even the Fire Slayers can do as much damage in a round as these trolls can.
Well,
and they're just a devastating army. So when we look at all of these armies, all the ones that we've talked about, and we look at all of the, like, you know, our best hard hitting troops, every one of these armies has units that are devastating.
Right.
Whether it's your brutes, whether it's your iron guts, whether it's your trolls, every single one of these destruction armies lives up to its name. They have the high damage troops, the high wound troops like the trolls, ogres, and brutes, and they have troops that are very efficient at wiping out units in one round of combat.
You're not kidding. You're not kidding. But I want to touch on one thing that we kind of hinted on in last week's show that we haven't brought up yet, as far as the destruction faction. And folks, for anybody curious about that, you can go back and listen to last week's show. And our question of the day was, you know, does an army that somebody plays reflect that person's personality?
Oh, without a doubt.
And yeah, I think we all agree that it definitely does. And, you know, Steve, you put it a heck of a lot better than I'm going to try to recall it. But, you know, you mentioned that, you know, your trolls kind of remind you of the Three Stooges. You know, they're kind of.
Well, they're devastating. They're, you know, they remind me of the Goonies, you know, the big crazy guy, you know.
Yeah.
What's funny about the trolls is that as much as they would be a terror to face on the battlefield, when you're playing them in the game, the idea of these, you know, moronic trolls going up against anything, and they, 9 times out of 10, they don't even know why they're smashing. They're just smashing because it's in their nature. They throw rocks because that's in their nature. They don't even know why they're doing. Like I said, you don't ever have to worry about trolls taking over the world because they're too damn stupid to understand even what conquering is.
Yep. Yeah. But
so
I think
a fun army to play.
Well, and there you go. You just said it. Destruction, by and large, is a fun army to play. You know, and yes. I'm going to go back to kind of what an army that I was considering on building at one time, and I've got 2,500 points of them sitting in a box, pretty much. And that was a right out of the Gloomspite gets, and that was an entire Squig army. I had Loom bosses on Mangler Squig. Matter of fact, Steve, I was going to run 4 Mangler Squigs in this
army.
I was going to run a Loom Boss.
Once again, that goes back to when people come to a tournament and they look at a table. You know, like I said, you're usually going to see all the Meta Chaser armies.
Right.
But when people see any Destruction army, they smile. They love seeing Destruction armies because we're just that crazy kid on the block that just wants to, you know, smash things and throw rocks. There's nothing. There's
or
nothing,
groin bite. Don't forget about the Nobblers.
Yeah, the who?
Hey, wait, watch it now.
But I mean, when you look at our destruction armies, we don't have an agenda. Our agenda is just to kill anything in front of us. There's no agenda. There's no Archaon. There's no Nagash. We're not. There's no plots or subplots. There's nothing to these armies except we want to destroy the next shiny thing that we see. And there's something funny about that. I mean, think about it. When you go to a tournament, people love seeing destruction armies. They love playing against them because they're fun armies to play against. You talk to people who play against Slaanesh, I don't hear one person say, yeah, I had a great time playing against those 75,000 Keepers of Secrets that were raised onto the table.
Yeah, right.
You just don't. You don't see anyone.
That's very
that.
True. That's a great point. And it's a very truthful point. Yeah.
People don't have fun playing against armies like that. You know, I mean, and I'm calling myself out too. People don't have fun playing things like Fire Slayers. They don't have fun playing things like Legions of Nagash, because those armies are so ridiculously over the top that the opponent doesn't even enjoy the game. But when you play against Destruction, even if you lose against a Destruction player, you still have fun because the models are so cool and the armies are so beautiful.
Yeah.
Especially when they're painted up well.
Yeah. And you know, you take something like, Squigs, where they got random movement and anything can happen. And in addition with being just a regular dice game.
Yes. They're zany. They're funny.
You take the Loon Smash of Fanatics and their crazy movement. And, you know, I have to totally agree that whatever faction in the Destruction line that you're going to be playing, whether it's the Gloomspite Gits or whether it's the Auric War Clans or whether it's the Ogre Maw Tribes, you're going to have a rip. I mean, you know, folks, let's put it this way. To my knowledge, I'm currently playing the largest Nobbler army on the field. I'm playing the largest Nobbler army. And you know what? I'm doing it because they're kooks. I mean, you're literally going up against 335 wounds. And it's just a fun army. It's a unique army. And that's... Oh.
It's going to be a rip to play against.
Yeah, and you know, and by the way, November 30th, folks, for anyone that's interested, you know, my two sidekicks right here, Steve is up first for the first Nobbler beating. We're going to, you know, the Nobblers are really going to, you know, take those Chogoths and just, you know, he can just leave them in the trunk. That's
the
beating.
Trolls are so stupid, they're just going to think you're puppies.
Yeah, and that's fine. And Randy, of course, you know, as you guys heard in last week's show, we're having the midget meltdown. We're going to be having the Nobblers versus his lousy stinking grots.
Well, no. That's not true.
Wait a minute.
No. You're the ones with our scrappers that roll around in garbage all day long.
Yeah, I don't understand. Versus trash.
I'm telling you right now, these Nobblers.
That's the reason why they have scrapper at the end of their name. You know, they roll around in trash.
No.
Exactly.
Scrapper meaning they're a good fighter, like they're like a scrapper. That's what they are.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think that's what it means, Pat.
Nobblers, do I got to say it again? Do I got to quote my old mofugga uncle?
Would you please not?
I got to tell you what, these guys are going to hit you so hard that you're going to get your money shook, your brain took, and your name in the Undertaker's book. There you go.
Yes, wow. Moving on. Yeah, wow.
They say that in a trash bag too.
That's it, Randy. You know, and folks, I want you guys to witness what's going to happen to these two guys right here.
All right, getting back to the subject at hand.
Yep.
So I think when we round out all of these armies, if you are a person thinking about playing one of these three Destruction armies, you are going to have probably one of the most enjoyable times in this hobby, because you have different variations of skill levels in all three of these armies. And I think you'll have a great time with them. So, you know, I personally would recommend Gloomspites. I know Pat would probably recommend Ogres. And I'm sure that Evan, if he were on the show, would probably recommend the Orcs.
Yeah.
So take a look at the models, see what you like, folks. But I can guarantee you, if you are playing the Destruction faction, you are going to have fun.
Yeah, I definitely have to concur with that 1,000% because, you know, it's funny. I always seem to get pulled back to Destruction of some sort. You know, I for a long time, you guys have heard me on the show and you guys see me out in the game. I've always loved my Beastie Boys, man. I play Beasts of Chaos. And what do they play like? A Destruction army.
They sure do.
So I've always felt that Beasts of Chaos should be Destruction anyways. And in my mind, they still are. Or they are. Now, I'm really happy that my co-host Steve talked this entire segment on the lovely Destruction unit of Nobblers. I'm not sure that we talked about any other units. I don't remember talking about Gloomspite Gits or Auric War Clans or Ogres. I remember talking about the best unit in the game, and that's Nobblers. And I'm really happy that you folks got a chance to listen to such beautiful soliloquy of an army. Just wonderful.
I'll give you five bucks if you can spell soliloquy.
Was it good for you guys too?
It's squish, isn't it? That's how you spell it, squish.
Unreal. All right, so we're not done. There's more to this show, folks. But Steve, honestly, bud, awesome topic, dude. That was a good one.
No problem.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the Grimdark Live experience and the show. If you want to support the show, please like and subscribe on YouTube and follow us on our podcast. This way, you'll be alerted when we post new content. If you'd like to support Grimdark Live further, head over to grimdarklive.com, get a t-shirt, dice, or there's Patreon, which makes our show possible, keeps our mics on and the lights buzzing. Big thanks to everyone, past, present, and future, who have supported Grimdark Live. We do this because of all of you, and of course, we will continue doing this for as long as we can. Okay, you guys ready for more Grimdark Live? Let's get back to the show. That was a good one. But here it is. We're going to kind of tie this into the question of the day. We're coming up to that point in the show where we've got this happening. So Steve, Randy, here it is. Steve, I think I'm going to throw this one at you, Randy.
Lay it on me.
You're right. So how does a player make a non-competitive army, I guess, into a competitive army? Is that a fair question?
Sure. Time and practice. Think that, and I think that's the very simple answer that probably everyone would give you. If you play what is considered to be, boy, we're going back to this term again, that perceived weakness.
Uh-huh. There we go.
If you play an army that has that perceived weakness and you can find a way to overcome it like you did by taking 300 nobblers instead of 60.
Beautiful.
You can take an army that was once looked at as a very weak army and turn it into a competitive army. That's what I'm attempting to do with the trolls. I'm going to be playing them a lot more, I can tell you, over the next year to hope that I get as much experience with them as possible. I am finding what works with them and what doesn't work and how certain situations can set up better combats. But I think that in
that's
the
a 5-0
end,
army.
Yeah, well, it can be, but that's very ambitious. But I think under the right circumstances, it can be a 4-1 to a 5-0 army with a lot of practice. And with at least 30 to 50 games under my belt. I think that's the case for any non-competitive army.
Yeah.
You will eventually see where the holes are in that army. And if you learn how to plug those holes, you can be very effective. And that's my take.
Yeah. I think, you know, Nigel Snowman once said, that you need 24 games, with an army. Don't mess with the build of it. Don't do anything with it. You need 24 games before any tournament. And I agree with that. I think that's,
I would too.
Yeah.
At least 24.
Yeah. Yeah. At least. Right. Right. Randy. So how about you, man? How does a player make a non-competitive army into a competitive one?
It does take a lot of games. Like one of the guys I met at Michigan GT, you know, went 4-1 with Chaos Dwarves. And one of the things that he had to do was to combat all the lists or whatever. He had to bring in a Beastman character just to have the Tauros. But in doing so, he was able to combat two Slaanesh lists that had dual keepers. Really, you know, think like, you know, the Chaos Dwarf thing, that they barely have an Allegiance ability and all that other stuff. And
yeah.
And he was hitting him, you know, rocking it out and went 4-1, you know. And just, you know, you gotta learn the meta and
mm-hmm.
And in doing so, you know what units to do and whatnot. And, you know, he had to cover, like, he found out a weakness and they had to cover it, you know, by using allies, but still, he had that base covered and, you know.
Right.
It's been, you know, works well. So.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. I mean, you know, no war is won. No, you know, sports game is won without intelligence. You have to know what's out there in front of you. You know, you have to know the lay of the land. You have to know the rules of engagement. You have to know what your enemy is all about. And I think part of that is also the reconnaissance factor. I think that if you're not going out there, and to me, one of the most important pieces of my army is the competitor's book. You know, for instance, I play Ogre Maw Tribes, but I have every single battle tome currently published, and I buy them for a reason. I read them all twice. And I do that because it helps me understand, even from a 5,000-foot view, when that person sets that army down in front of me. Now, yeah, of course, you're going to have to practice with the army, and you're going to have to get to know your own army, which you should. But I think how to make a non-competitive army into a competitive one, know what's out there. You know, knowing, as you guys have always heard the phrase, is half the battle. You know, if you know that you know, you've got a Chargoth unit in front of you that's hitting at -2, -3. Well, then how can you take that away from them? Or for instance, you know, if you're playing Slaanesh and you know they got the Contorted Epitome out there, and that thing can cast 2 spells and it can do all these buffs to their units that are within 12 inches of them. You want to be able to how do you take that ability away from them? You know, how do you maneuver around the Keeper of Secrets, per se? You know, what does that Keeper of Secrets do? I think it's important. I think the reconnaissance end of it and the intelligence end of this game is vitally important. A lot of times gamers make the mistake of saying, okay, I've got ogres. They're big models. They got these great, big, choppy-looking weapons. I'm just going to read everything there is to know about ogre maw tribes, and I'm going to build this list with gluttons, and I'm going to win every game. And then they come up against something as simple as a Sylvaneth army with Kurnoth hunters, and they get their nuts shot off on the table. And then they take that army, and they put it on eBay, and they sell it, and then they go play a different game. And I think that's, to me, that's how you can, any army to me, and folks, you've heard us all talk about this, any army, in my thought, can be a competitive army.
I agree.
So, yeah, that's my take on it.
So there's your 2 cents.
There's my 2 cents in a tin can. So, but I got to tell you, man, what a fun show this was. I mean, a lot of times we have to really kind of get into the grit and grizzle, right? But that destruction topic, man, I really think.
Well, all three of us play it, so I mean, it makes sense that if you're dealing with a show full of guys that has, you know, destruction as their focal point, naturally, I think we're gonna want to talk about it.
Yeah. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And you know, I would just, there's nothing more to say. But great topic on that one, comparing the different destruction factions between Gloomspite Gits, Orc Warclans, and Ogre Maw Tribes. But
a public service announcement brought to you by Frag Factory 3D Printing. Many of us have thousands of dollars in miniatures, yet we play on flat tables with books and overturned Tupperware to act as our fantasy and sci-fi landscapes. We've all drooled over the tables we see in magazines, lush with beautifully created terrain from all genres. The crew at Frag Factory 3D Printing want to wipe that drool from your chin and put it firmly on your friends and fellow gamers when they see your setup. Alien landscapes, desert wastelands, futuristic cities, fantasy outposts, elven forests, demonic stronghold, and so much more. Find out what you've been missing by checking us out on Facebook at Frag Factory 3D Printing, or send us an email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com. Bring your own files, or we will help you find what you've been searching for. Take your gaming to the next level with Frag Factory 3D Printing. We print life into your games. Tell them Grimdark Live sent you, and your first hour of printing is free.
Hey gang, in all seriousness, get your terrain on the table and get it with Frag Factory 3D Printing. And remember, tell them Grimdark Live sent you, and they'll give you 1 hour free. You can get them via email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com or their Facebook page, Frag Factory 3D Printing.
Frag Factory 3D Printing, printing life into your games.
Now, back to the show. Moving on to the closing thoughts. It's hard to believe that we're actually at the point in the show. This has been this show kind of flew by, man, huh?
Yeah, it sure did.
And you know, if you guys will indulge me for a second here, I kind of want to talk on something that's kind of been in the back of my mind for a long time as my closing thought. And if you'll bear with me for 6-7 minutes, I can pretty much get through it. And as a closing thought, I'd like to hear from you guys. Okay. And what I want to talk about is pettiness, you know, and I know you guys know that in my head, while thinking about these little topics of ours to talk about, I usually have 3 to 4 different thoughts on the conversations I intend to have with you. And so in a sense, I have a lot of conversations with you folks and to you that you'll never know about. And they're usually pretty freaking hilarious, at least in my head. But this one, you know, I look at it this way, and I'm going to use some pretty kind of over the top terms here, but just kind of bear with me. You know, I think we have some kind of a plague. I'm going to call it that, a plague and a problem in the gaming community. You know, whether you're young, old, a boy, girl, gay, straight, doesn't matter. There's a problem in the community, and that's the big old petty plague that I like to call pettiness. I struggle with this. I imagine you also struggle with it too. And the thing is this, pettiness is taking something very small and turning it into something very big. And so much of our difficulties that we have in maintaining a community, you know, difficulties with people, I guess the best way to put it, those difficulties are petty problems. And pettiness in gaming can be sometimes like this. Pretty small thing like how my opponent rolls their dice, moves their models, or maybe how they respond to a game action or an answer to a rules question. Whatever the petty thing is, we seem to focus on it. And you can all come up with your own example, but we focus on those seemingly little things and turn them into gigantic issues. You know, we let those things bother us, divide our relationships, and divide this community. And it takes away from what this hobby is. And that's a game. Leisure, relaxing, fun, all of those things get erased once petty things become amplified. So here's what I'd like to talk about. And really here's the cusp of it. How do we handle pettiness? How do we handle these temptations to pettiness? And it's very much like this as an example. It's like a seed planted by a few passive aggressive twerps in the community that says things like, look at what he's doing. He keeps doing that. And when the pettiness sort of grows, then we all dig into that. And it gives reason for them, motivations for them. And we expound upon it, building this whole narrative about how terrible this person is or this part of the game is and how we let it grow to which becomes gossip, rumors, and the general things, I guess, that kill gaming groups and communities. And for what? Because someone shook their dice too long, they bumped their models. So we have to admit, you know, pettiness is a small thing we make a big thing out of, and that pettiness is rampant in the community. And I've seen it recently, which is why this is my closing thought. And what I'd like to do is this. I don't want to get into too many examples of petty problems because I think it's too ubiquitous. So common, we all kind of see it in our lives. So I guess here in the gaming community, what I'd like to do is offer some ways we can combat the pettiness. Real simple, make a firm resolve to not be a petty person or a gamer. This community is not that big, so it's easy for folks to see you, get to know you, and you see people and get to know them. And I recall once at a tournament, and no, Steve, Randy, this is not going to be a short pants story, I promise. I was at this table next to another table. There were these two guys were playing their game of Warhammer, and the gist of the story here is on the pettiness I witnessed between these two guys. It was obvious both of these gamers were all in serious type of a gamer, and it was obvious to them that they were no longer pushing plastic dollies across the tabletop and playing a game, but that they were actually on a battleground, on a battlefield. And it was literally became this place where the petty plague showed up, and it really showed its ugly face. And there was a great conflict between them, both over the pace of the game phases, where they would vocalize to each other about it, how one guy rolled his dice, they complained to each other about that, how each other moved their models to a point where they were measuring each other's models to ensure coherency. And at one point, one model was probably a 16th of an inch outside of coherency. And that guy called over a judge because in the battle shock phase, his opponent should have removed one more model because of this. Let me tell you that these little things started at the beginning of the game and went all through five rounds. It became some big, massive point of conflict where I actually mentioned to the passing TO, he was just walking by, and I said to him, I go, there might be a problem at that table, to where he just brushed off attitude, said, that's gamers for you. And if you're anyone like me, I was thinking, really?
You know, yeah, you guys, what a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, you guys are pissed about how long somebody shakes their dice or micro details like 16th of an inch. I guess this excuse can be made that it was a tournament and that all of that does matter. But I think by and large, it's nothing that we can just excuse. I think it's more of the, well, that's gamers for you type of mentality. And I can understand from a largely monastic gamer type point of view, because so many of your life is you know, so many in this hobby, I should say, their life is pretty small and intimately tied to this hobby and this game, that those petty items can seem cavernous and really misinterpreted as how unimportant they really are to those particular people. And I get that. But at the same time, we must remember that we're grown people playing largely a child's game, plastic figures, plastic miniatures, plastic dollies, if you will. You know, I have to constantly remind myself to never become that, to never let that happen to me. And you should do the same. The community in this hobby will be better off for it. And I make this resolution that when I recognize pettiness in this gaming community or opponent or myself, I have this memory, this reminder of how ugly and ridiculous or unreasonable or disproportionate pettiness really is. And I've decided not to be that guy. So I'm going to offer you this. You know, if you have a story of some sort of pettiness that you've had, make a resolution that that's below me. I'm not going to be that petty person. And remember that story and use it as a reminder. You know, say to yourself, I'm not going to give in to pettiness. And if I'm experiencing it, I'm going to cast it out. Second, practice to help deal with pettiness. You know, that comes from understanding that you cannot control another person that's on the other side of the table from you, regardless of who they are, be it your best friend or tournament opponent. All you can do is control yourself. You know, accept the fact that every so often you're going to come across a short pants, period. As a real life example, and I promise you guys, I'm winding down my closing thought here. As a real life example, once I was playing this game against someone I game against often, and this person would shake his dice, and I mean a lot of dice during the entire game. If he was rolling them or not, it was like a freaking maracas going off the entire game. And when I hear something like that, I hyper-focus on it. So the maraca dice dude was driving me batshit crazy. Petty, right? I mean, I know it is. Anyway, so when I'm in the game, I'm trying to concentrate on moves or tactics. And when I have this dice maracas going off for five battle rounds, one game after another, I finally snapped and said something to him. It literally hijacked my attention and I could not address it. And it just drove me nuts. But let's be honest, it's a small thing, a petty thing. So I'd said something to him. Hey, dude, what's the deal with the dice maracas? You know, trying to be funny. And he explained it was some OCD meets nervous, keeping him awake type thing. Any rate, you know what happened after I spoke to him? Nothing. He just kept on playing the dice maracas. And for this guy, it was just a habit, something he did. There were not ill motives, no really big issues. But what it did for me was made me realize on how to solve this. And that was not try to change his dice maracas fetish, but maybe I got to work on me. And I'm not just going to learn to be strong enough to deal with it and to be strong enough to realize that a little bit of annoyance or disagreement isn't going to rock my pushing plastic dollies across the game table world. So I try to put into practice what I can do and what I can accept and what I couldn't. And I gave it all up to the dice god of who gives a shit. And this is really for the service of the unity of this community. And so I guess I'll wrap it up with this. You know, it helped me a lot. So if something is going on in your life that's a small, petty thing with someone in or out of this gaming community, maybe you should just bring it up very charitably, kindly, and maybe it changes. Maybe it doesn't. And that's the opportunity for you to change. And finally, is this. Pettiness is a problem of perspective, right? Like, we need to keep things into perspective and don't be passive-aggressive cunt or gossip or block folks on Facebook or some of those other petty wimp acts like that. And if you're doing that now, stop it. This hobby and this community is already fragile enough. One poor economy can halt this game and all the tournaments in it. So don't let something that's in your control, like pettiness, trash the awesome environment of this glue-sniffing, dolly-pushing community that we're all in. There's my 2 cents in a tin can for that one. Guys, what do you think?
Yeah, it reminds me of a story that one of my opponents told me at Holy Havoc, where he said that a guy got so flustered in a game that he literally came around to the other side of the table and tried to physically intimidate him. Guys, there is a fine. If you're ever in a situation where you have lost yourself to that extent, it might be a good, it might be a good time to walk away either from the table or from the game and reorient yourself, because we've all had bad days, but we try not to have bad years.
Yeah, and you better be damn careful. If you come across that table, you don't know who you're dealing with.
You don't know who you're dealing with, exactly. You know, so you need, you know, and that really struck me, though, when he told me that. I was like, my God, can we, you know, can people actually get to the point in this hobby where they try to do something silly like that? And, but it happens. And I think that it's something we all need to check ourselves on and make sure that we're remembering that there are real life consequences sometimes for decisions we may make in a game.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Randy, any thoughts on the closing thoughts, or do you agree?
I totally agree. So just, yeah, just have fun and
that's
play,
it.
Play your game or whatever, you know.
That's it.
We're all here for the same reason. You know, we found this hobby as an outlet for something.
That's it, man. Yeah, though. It's all about pushing plastic dollies across the table, man, rolling them dice. But good stuff today, guys. What a great show. Another great show. And what a good way to end this one.
Grimdark Live, I'd like to thank you for slumming it through another show with us for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Age of Sigmar worlds. We'll be back live next Thursday, so until then, remember, roll them dice fun and fair, and don't be a frickin' short pants. If you missed the live show, you can catch us again right here on the next Grimdark Live podcast. Never fear, gang, there'll be more great content from Grimdark Live throughout the week with Monster Mondays, Table War Tuesdays, Warhammer Wednesdays, Grimdark Grudge Matches, and a ton more, so stay tuned and stay grim, all you dice-chucking, glue-sniffing gamer goons. You're all awesome.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
Remember, embrace the main message here from Grimdark Live, and that's a social contract we have between gamers and the commitment we have to each other and this community. We're only as good as our last game. Check us out at GrimdarkLive.com. Don't forget to give our channel a like or subscribe if you haven't already done so. So long, Grimdark Goons. Until next time, may the dice gods bless you and your sweaty palms.